You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're not going to kill you or hurt you really, really bad. We're just going to say a bunch of absurd shit that actually isn't that absurd. And as always, if you enjoy your trip into the midside, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. Joining us this trip, via Skype, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. And Daniel, as you noticed and noted pre-show here, I am, my voice is exhibiting the end of a sinus infection, which I know you suffered many of them when you were out here in California, and you have a cool, like, Dr. House story, right?
Yeah, ish. I had a bazillion sinus infections when I lived in California, and so I no doctor could diagnose, and thus I was referred to a doctor who is basically a real-life Dr. House. Like, he gets patients sent to him who other doctors cannot diagnose, and he puts you through a battery of tests, and then he asked me 55 questions. Yeah, I was trying to think exactly. And then he said, it's either something that can be treated with Flonase on a daily basis, or you will need major reconstructive surgery on your sinuses. And I said, well, give me the Flonase. I'll try that one out. And it has actually reduced the number of sinus infections I get to maybe one a year.
He didn't propose,
down from like five.
He didn't propose some outlandish test to figure out which of the two it was?
No, although I suppose he was diagnosing me via treatment. Here, take this Flonase. If it makes it better, then I was right. If it doesn't, come back and I'll cut your face open.
Oh, I didn't. He didn't like say instead of the Flonase, like I'll waterboard you and see how your sinuses respond.
Let me put you upside down in a tank for hours. No.
And at any point when he was asking you those 55 questions, did you worry he was stalling you while someone was breaking into your apartment and searching it?
I asked if he had a team, and he said no, he works alone.
Which is the real life house answer, yeah.
Yes. Also at that time, he did not take my insurance, and so I had to pay out of pocket. But he, like, after the examination, he said that I was one of the more rational patients he's ever had, so he cut the bill down from $800 to $80.
I feel like this is House if he was real.
Yeah, it was a bizarre experience. Like, we talked about philosophy and life and politics, and it was bizarre. So I only had to pay $80 for, like, this world-class diagnostician.
There we go. I wonder, David Shore must go to him. You should have asked him that. If David Shore was one of his clients. And then if he flinched, you knew if he lied to you or not.
And then he hit me with his cane on the way out.
Yeah, I was going to make that joke. Also joining us via Skype from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. How are you doing, Elliot?
I'm wondering if I should call you Mr. J.
Please don't. You just took away that fantasy for me. Like, I've been with all the girls dressing up like Harley Quinn. The odds of me being exactly the odds of me being able to get that to happen this year, I had already fantasized about that in my mind, and you just took that away from me because you were the first one.
I think you're more of a Puddin than a Mr. J, but yeah.
Joker says Puddin to Harley.
Yeah,
that was kind of a joke. Like, I don't. Like, do I have to explain the joke, or
it just doesn't work? It doesn't work.
I was making fun of you.
No, I get it.
That's how it works.
You just got to try a little
harder.
Excellent. And you know what? I will give you an opportunity to try a little harder because you get the first segment every week. So let's just roll into that. It's time for The News with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a
In all these weeks past, we've talked some politics, We've talked some Democratic convention, some Republican convention, a lot of Trump-Clinton talk. But one guy who doesn't come up quite a lot on this show, surprisingly, is Gary Johnson.
Snicker.
Libertarian candidate for president. Thank you.
Johnson doesn't come up.
I wrote all these myself. Thank you.
Oh, good. Hey, Elliot, that's what prep looks like. See, that's how you make fun of someone, Daniel.
Oh, thank you, O Master.
Yeah.
We don't talk a lot about Gary Johnson, and for good reason, mostly because no one else talks about Gary Johnson, so he's never in the news. But that may be changing. According to some recent polls, Gary Johnson is doing particularly well in some interesting categories. He's not yet hit 15%, which is what he needs in order to get into the national debates, presidential debates. But he's been polling recently at 12 or 13% in some polls, which is within the margin of error. And additionally, Reason.com tells us that Gary Johnson is edging out Donald Trump among non-whites, for instance, which is interesting. Of course, Hillary Clinton is winning that group with 70% of the vote.
Wow.
But Gary Johnson has 8%. Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, has 7%. Also has 8%. And Donald Trump has 7%. So even the Green Party candidate is beating out Donald Trump among non-whites. And if you combine the Johnson-Stein numbers, that's 16%. That's double what Trump is getting.
Johnson-Stein sounds like a late-night law firm that's like, did you get hit while you were in a crosswalk? Call
you
us!
You may be entitled to compensation. Emphasis
Do you
on
have
may.
Mesothelioma? Yes.
Is there a giant wall being constructed in your backyard?
Are you suffering from black lung disease?
Black lungs matter.
Oh,
nicely done.
But the other poll, which is not in the Reason thing, which I pulled up, which I thought was particularly interesting, is that Gary Johnson is beating Donald Trump among voters under 30. So Donald Trump is, in fact, in last among voters under 30. So here's the breakdown. Trump's coming in at 9% with voters under 30, compared to Hillary Clinton, again, winning this category with 41%. But second place, Gary Johnson at 23%.
Yeah.
By the way, Jill Stein, 16%. 7% above Donald Trump.
Look, if the Green Party is beating you, I'm sure that you need to just hand in the resignation.
Well, it's not even the Green Party. Like, at least if it was the Green Party and it was Ralph Nader, you'd be like, oh, there's awareness. Who is Jill Stein? This is the first time I've heard her name. I've read the article and I don't even remember her name until now.
Yeah, Jill Stein, Green Party candidate, doesn't get a lot of a press attention because she's a bit of an anti... Oh, zing. Except that there is a quasi-woman running on the Democratic ticket. She's an anti-vaxxer, one of those. Oh. And she has hinted that she may not believe the Holocaust happened.
Okay, so, I was going to say that's consistent until the Holocaust thing, but, like, anti-vaxxing is kind of consistent with environmentalism. It's like, you know, wanting to go back to, like, cavemanism.
Yeah, we'll get to cavemanism in a moment. But here's my question to both of you. Gary Johnson seems to be taking more votes from the Democrats than he is from the Republicans. In fact, Hillary Clinton is beating Gary Johnson among conservatives. Pretty badly, by the way.
Can you actually read the sentence? It's number two as it's written in the article.
The second sentence?
No, number.
It's
point number two about Hillary.
Yeah, here we go. Hillary Clinton is thumping Gary Johnson among conservatives. The CNN/ORC poll is brutal on this score, with Clinton nabbing 21% of cons versus just 8% for Johnson. She also ekes out narrower victories among Republicans in both CNN and CBS polls.
That is the closest Hillary's ever gotten to thumping a Johnson, especially with conservatives.
You were sitting on that joke for a while, weren't you? You've been waiting for it.
That's a good one.
It is a good one, but you were waiting for that one.
Yes.
You're right. I am always waiting to whip out a Johnson.
Whip out a Johnson, baby.
So here's my question to you. If Johnson is basically just Democrat light, which he has showed recently in his two libertarian town halls on CNN, are you going to vote for Johnson over Trump or Clinton?
Yes.
Elliot. And yes. Tell me why.
because he is the only candidate up there that has any vague, well, not even that vague. It's actually in a lot of ways very specific. But he has a much better grasp on what the role of government is supposed to be, which is the protection of rights. I wish he were more consistent on that front in certain positions that he strikes, particularly, you know, the, you know, forcing Christian bakeries to make gay wedding cakes, things like that. But I really do think that of the options available, he is the one who understands the concept of individual rights and who will actually take us closer to that than away from that. Trump is not going to lead us towards that. He's only going to lead us more towards restrictionism and more collectivism, and just he's not the guy. Hillary is a corrupt criminal. She doesn't believe in the rule of law. There can't be any protection of rights if a person believes that they are not subject to the rule of law, if they don't believe that they have to respect anyone else's rights. And Jill Stein's, I mean, you know, she's kind of a whack job, but kind of a Trotsky in a way. So, I mean, of those candidates, I think he's the one, at least on a national platform, that really is the closest that we're going to come in this election to having a candidate that is going to limit government. And we can agree or disagree on how he goes about that, but the goal matches what I look for. So for me, I am going to cast my vote for him, and I'm not ashamed to do so.
I need clarification before I can answer the question. And the reason I need clarification is the only time I've really heard him talk is when he was on Penn Jillette's podcast. And I think he might have been on Adam Carolla's too. Am I correct?
He was, yes.
Right, so I heard him on both of those. And I agree with Adam that he came across as a pussy, but he didn't come across particularly like a liberal to me on either of those podcasts. So my question is, does he just pander to whatever audience he's on? Or is he smart enough to know that the entire nation is tilted left, so he's marketing himself on the mainstream as a leftist to try and get more votes?
Well, I think it's more the latter. I mean, I think he is a little more left than he is right on the libertarian spectrum.
But is he left on socialist issues because he wants to, like, doesn't he own, like, a marijuana thing or something?
He used to be a CEO of a marijuana company, and so he's for total legalization of marijuana. But I think it's more so the second. I think he's trying to expand the Libertarian Party tent, to get more people to consider the Libertarian Party. And he's doing so by trying to appeal to the left, where he thinks there are going to be a lot of disenfranchised Clinton voters. Now, he is throwing the right under the bus in many ways, for instance, with Elliot's example of the religious baker. And I have a quick story about that in a moment. But what I want to say is that I've sort of been full on go Gary Johnson until the last Libertarian town hall. And now I sort of have to talk myself back into voting for him.
Yeah, I saw you were tweeting about something about that.
I was livid because he gave one of the worst answers I've ever heard from a presidential candidate on terrorism. When asked, basically, he was thrown a softball question that was something the equivalent of, like, as president, what are you going to do to keep us safe from terror attacks? Which you can pivot to any goddamn thing you want. And this is what he said, quote, maybe we're the kind of candidates that are going to say, look, this stuff is going to happen. Yes, a president of the United States, we need to be vigilant to potentially prevent these things from happening, but things are going to happen. What the fuck kind of answer is that? Need to tell me that Gary Johnson, President Gary Johnson, on September 11th, is going to look out the window of the White House at the Pentagon, smoke, and go, huh, these things are going to happen.
But wouldn't that be the most epic speech a president could ever give? Like September 12th, he comes out, and in his famous speech that goes down in history is shit happens.
He would be hung from the nearest tree, I suspect, the day on September 12th, if that's the speech he would have given. So I actually had to pause because libertarians are generally bad on foreign policy anyway. Johnson wasn't the worst libertarian I'd ever heard on foreign policy. But what the fuck kind of answer is that? Elliot, do you want to give any defense of this? Is there any positive spin that I'm missing?
And I've said before, he is terrible on foreign policy in a lot of ways. If I were being generous, I would say that what he was probably trying to say is that, and this is me being very generous again in my interpretation, but that government's proper role is really the punishment of crimes and things that have happened. It can't stop every bad thing from happening, and we should not sacrifice our liberties in the name of stopping bad things that may or may not be preventable. And that's me being, again, very charitable.
That is very charitable, but I would like to say that if you could please just get a job consulting as a speechwriter for Mr. Johnson, he so desperately needs it, which leads me into my quick story, which is that Midsider Michael, who co-hosted the show some time ago, during the Libertarian Town Hall, during the Libertarian Town Hall on CNN, texts me and says, I'm having dinner with Johnson's deputy campaign director.
What the fuck?
I thought he was joking because we're watching the Libertarian Town Hall and it's on. So I text back something smartass, which is like, tell him the money comment was awesome, but tell him he needs to write Johnson a coherent answer to the cake question, please and thank you. And then I later on, I'm like, but wait, really? Are you? And he said, yes, I absolutely unequivocally am having dinner with him. And I just told him everything you said.
And what did he say to what you said?
He said I didn't get a response. I haven't talked to Michael. He's been on vacation, but I get a sense that I lost my chance at ever consulting on the Johnson campaign. So thank you, Michael, for drawing that smart-ass answer out of me. But nonetheless.
The whole thing with this to me is just like, we could talk all day about whether it's worth voting for Gary Johnson or not. The bigger thing for me is like, you know, I've identified as Republican for a lot of my life. You know, I was in the Ithaca College Republicans in undergrad. This poll and this response and everything with Trump, I'm done with the Republican Party. Like, never again in my life, unless there's a complete sort of reformation, like it's burnt to the ground and built back up again. But the fact that most conservatives are leaving and going to Hillary shows how conservatives actually favor big government and don't favor small government. And that's all I need to know. Because any conservative that would leave because of Trump and go to Hillary just has no principles at all.
Yeah.
And that shows what's been wrong with the Republican Party and how Trump, a Democrat, became the Republican nominee. You brought this on yourself, Republicans. You brought this on yourself.
But the never-Trumpers will be blamed, by the way.
Right. I know. They're already doing it by blaming Cruz, saying Cruz should have, you know, just got in line and waited for his turn next time. If he had played by party politics, we would have given him his turn next time. How about the fact that he actually had fucking principles? Maybe somebody in this goddamn country needs that. Maybe that's a good thing. Who's the last person, Daniel, you were telling me this, who's the last person who gave a speech decrying the nominee?
I think that was Ronald Reagan.
Ah, okay.
Who gave a speech when he lost the nomination to Gerald Ford, basically saying the same thing Cruz said, like, you know, vote however you think, and did not give a full-throated endorsement of Gerald Ford. And turns out that was a good thing in the long run. So
I think that sums it up. Next story.
Next story. Moving on. We were talking earlier about, primitives? Something about primitives?
Yeah, I said cavemanism because I couldn't think of the word primitive. But yes, primitive is a better word.
So the New York Times, in the science section, this is not an op-ed. I want to preface everything with this. In the science section, decided to write a very timely article on the hazards of fire and the downsides of man having discovered fire. Yes, ladies and gentlemen. So here we go. Quote, the opening of the article, when early humans discovered how to build fires, life became much easier in many regards. By the way, all these qualifiers in this article are awesome. Life became easier in many regards. You mean completely and entirely possible? Awesome. Thanks. Skipping down a little bit, but there were downsides too. Occasionally, the smoke burned their eyes and seared their lungs. Their food was likely coated with char, which might have increased their risk for certain cancers, which I'm sure the fucking starving cavemen were worried about.
Die when you're 80 or die when you're 30 of starvation.
Yeah. So with everyone congregated in one place, diseases could have been transmitted more easily. So this article goes on about the recent research in the downsides of having discovered, like, harnessed fire.
But did
I
you see
couldn't
what
believe
it,
this.
Did you see what it said at the top? They quoted a university professor who's been studying, like, the cultural ramifications of the discovery of fire in a positive way. And he said that the negative ramifications are just barroom talk at this point.
So worthy of a New York Times article?
Right, that's my point. Like, if you're reporting on what professors talk about in the bar, you've run out of subjects to talk about. People care more about Clark Kent versus the Batman. And I've heard they don't care about that.
Clark Kent taking on the Batman.
So here's where it goes really fucking off the rails. So they talk about all these biological consequences, but then we get to this gem of a fucker. You ready for this? Quote, negative cultural consequences came with fire too and continue to leave an imprint. Anthropologists have speculated that inhaling smoke led to the discovery of smoking.
Oh my gosh.
Humans have long used fire to modify their environment and burn carbon. Practices that now have us in the throes of climate change. And if we couldn't have done, we're about to do the fucking trifecta of leftist nonsense. First, we have the thing they hate more than anything in the goddamn world, which is smoking, by the way. And then second, we have closely related climate change. But here we go for the idiot trifecta. Fire is even tied to the rise of patriarchy by allowing men to go out hunting while women stayed behind to cook by the fire. It spawned gender norms that still exist today.
Stupid.
So I said to Justin in the thread, New York Times declares fire bad.
Look, this is just the crazy hot scale. Are you familiar with the crazy hot scale from How I Met Your Mother?
Yep.
Yes. For those uninitiated out there, this is the best thing to come out of How I Met Your Mother. So the ladies' man, Barney Stinson, played by Neil Patrick Harris, had this theory where a girl can only be as crazy as she is hot for you to want to have sex with her. The minute she's crazier than she is hot, you don't want to have sex with her anymore because the negatives outweigh the positives. Anything in life, and this fire's a perfect example because it, like, romanticizes this point. Anything in life is the crazy hot scale. Is fire hotter than it is crazy? I mean, this is, it literally is the crazy hot scale. Fire is a hell of a lot hotter than it is crazy. Look, I agree. Breathing in smoke is bad. Cancer is bad. I will even concede to you that the patriarchy is bad in this case. But you know what? Fire does a hell of a lot more good than it does bad.
Oh, God. I couldn't believe this was a thing, first of all. Second, that it was in the New York Times. And third, that they literally hit the trifecta of things the left hates the most.
And here's I have another thing that I always wonder about this. Who fucking breathed smoke in for the first time and was like, you know, if we put this at the end of, like, a rolled up piece of paper and, like, put it directly into our lungs, that would be really good. That's like the first person who, like, licked a toad or licked a mushroom to figure out they could get high. Like, who breathed in the smoke from, like, cooking the yak and was like, oh, yeah, I wish I could do this all the time in small increments.
Well, it's like who discovered milk, you know? Who decided to play with the udder on a cow and produce milk?
I can tell you that.
Yeah.
And here's another one for you. You know what fire also got you? You accidentally burnt marijuana plants, so now you can be stoners, you goddamn hippies.
Indeed. That's what I thought as they were making fun of Native Americans, who are one of the first major smoking cultures. So this is
racist.
A racist article,
yeah.
In my opinion. But
are they saying they're Redskins because their skin was burnt from the fire?
Apparently. A little too close to the heat there.
Daniel, you should have written that letter to the editor, I swear. You would have gotten an apology so fast or some kind of a retraction.
Yes.
It would have been brilliant. This article is latent anti-indigenous people bigotry, and I don't like that.
Here's what two things. If there's any silver lining to this article, it's that the left doesn't like to look at negative externalities in addition to positive externalities. And maybe this is some tiny minute shift, like this is being really fucking generous, but it's the same thing they do with, like, I don't know, anything, like climate change. Well, like, what are the positive externalities of climate change? Like, would more carbon in the atmosphere maybe be good for plants and good for life on Earth? Have we thought about that? So thinking about externalities in general, maybe that's a minor positive. But the second thing here is really that this article is insidious in more ways than sort of it is absurd.
I have to interrupt you. Isn't externality an economic term?
Yes, it comes from economics. Sort of metaphorically here.
No, I understand that. You're using it metaphorically, and we've talked about this before, I think. The reason I'm kind of annoyed is, not at you, the fact that people have tried to make externalities a thing outside of economics. Every action has a reaction, and it has many reactions we can't control. We cannot punish people or see things as negative because they have unintended consequences.
Yeah. Agreed.
I mean, going to the gym is going to hurt my body in the long run, too. It's going to wear out my joints. But it's also going to make me healthier in the long run, too. But, oh, where's out your joints so you can't work out? Like, I mean, what the fuck? Where does it stop?
Right. The point here philosophically is you can't judge a thing because it has any negative consequences. You have to weigh the negative consequences versus the positive, and that's sort of what the joke is about this article.
The crazy hot
scale.
It looks
at these negative things, except it negates the fact that fire made all of civilization possible if you take it to its logical extreme, including things like energy, which is what I think is really insidious about this article. The fact that it so easily undercuts basically the idea that humans should be modifying their environment in the first place to suit their own needs.
Well, isn't that what Alex? That's what Alex Epstein has been writing about all this time.
No.
You know, the idea that fossil fuels have made the world better, made human life last longer, have made our surroundings better and safer for us, and there are people that want to destroy it and tear it down because they completely, either they are consciously opposed to the fact that human beings have the capacity to shape the world into the image of their highest values. Or they just subconsciously absorb this kind of ridiculous implicit philosophy that human beings don't have a right to shape their world to themselves.
Yeah. Look, all of that is well and good. I don't disagree with any of that philosophically. But I'm going to simplify this article for you even more. Ready?
Yes.
This is like saying Mila Kunis is hot, but she dated Macaulay Culkin for a lot of years. That's what this article is saying.
Oh my God, are you serious? She did?
You just proved my point. She's still hot. It doesn't matter that she dated Macaulay Culkin for all those years.
Yeah, she's not that hot. Yeah, here's to paraphrase.
I picked someone I thought we'd all agree on.
If you seen her without makeup? Here's to paraphrase Ayn Rand. She wrote something to the effect of like, and I thought it was perfect for this, even though I couldn't find the exact quote. It was something like, it's likely that the man who invented fire was probably burned at the stake for being a heretic. So that's sort of how I feel about the professor's entire approach in this piece. But nonetheless, Tinder, speaking of fire.
Ah, there you go.
Nicely done.
I like that. The bush. Yeah.
Daily Mail reports on a scientific study involving men and Tinder that male users of the app have low self-esteem compared to non-Tinder users.
Also breaking news, people who drink water are thirsty, pun intended.
Indeed. Article opens, they might be tall, dark, and handsome, but men on the dating app Tinder suffer from low self-esteem, a study found. A survey of more than 1,300 men and women revealed that those who use the highly popular smartphone app tend to be less happy with their looks. Psychologists warn the app could be bad for your health, with users drawn into a downward spiral of physical comparisons. This is Professor Jessica Strubel, she has an umlaut in her name, from the University of North Texas. Quote, Tinder users reported having lower levels of satisfaction with their faces and bodies and having lower levels of self-worth than men and women who did not use Tinder. The study involved 1,044 women and 273 men, all undergraduates, who completed questionnaires about their Tinder use, body image, perceived objectification, and psychological well-being. So, gentlemen, does Tinder cause lower self-esteem, or are people with lower self-esteem more attracted to apps like Tinder?
False dichotomy.
Or, thank you.
I just thought I'd cut you off with a pass there.
I always like to set up these easy false dichotomies for Justin because I think it's his favorite two words in the human language.
It is. So. True story. My ex said that I used to wake up in the middle of the night. No, I didn't wake up, but she would wake up in the middle of the night and I would be just in my sleep saying false dichotomy.
Sounds like you. Yes.
Which I thought was the funniest thing I ever heard. But no, it's a cycle. I think it attracts people with low self-esteem, which further reinforces the low self-esteem. I mean, a theory I've had that I've been telling you for a long time, Daniel, is I think it's a very low quality amount of the type of people on online dating are low quality. And I think this study just confirms that for me. And the reason I think this happens is a couple. One, people go on it and they think it's a way they're going to get affirmation of whether they're attractive or not. You know, oh, if people actually respond to me, it means I'm attractive. But they don't understand that it's only the other type of people who are giving them problems to begin with. And then also, this is something you talked about with the gamification of it, especially Tinder. It feels like an easy solution to a very complex problem. It's like, we need a franchise quarterback. Oh, well, just go on Tinder and you'll find one. Like, if you just keep swiping, you'll find the right quarterback who's going to solve your franchise's problems. The reason I'm making that metaphor is, as we pointed out, like, with all the people in the world, we can only get, like, five people who are actually good at playing quarterback. Well, it's the same thing. Like, the number of people who actually have chemistry with you is very low, and the number of people who actually are, you know, even going to be, you're even going to want to, you know, get to know it all is low. So the idea that these apps are going to help is so low, but it has the specious air about it that it will. But then, of course, what does it lead to? Well, all you do is tweak your image over and over again. Take better pictures. Change what you're saying. Change the way your messages are going. So you become completely self-focused. And I'm, you know, I don't want to say you're being selfish, but I'm saying it leads to almost narcissism in a way, because you're so focused on tweaking your own image and everything that you're not focusing on pursuing values in other people.
Someone's thought about this quite a bit.
Yeah, well, I've told you.
Look, all I'm going to say is, if you really want men with low self-esteem, get on Grindr for a day. You will see depravity.
I have neither used Tinder nor Grindr or any of these sort of modern dating apps. I luckily got out of the dating game before they became popular. The last dating site I used was OkCupid. And while I got quite a few dates on OkCupid, I did end up meeting and marrying a woman who I met entirely in real life and had no online interaction with at all until years into our relationship.
Proving
when she finally joined Facebook.
Yeah, and she has like five friends. But I mean, that just proves my theory. And online dating has gotten so absurd now. Like, it's so stigmatized at this point that it can't really be online dating anymore. Have you heard about the new app Happn?
Happn.
No, what is it?
This is an app where you make a profile and it tells you who you cross paths with. So it's sort of trying to do what you're just talking about, Daniel. It would have been like if you met Fiza by, you know, crossing paths with her but not talking to her, and then saw her on the app and like hit her up on the app and be like, oh, hey, I saw you in the bar or something like that. So it seems a little more natural, but at the same time, it's not marketed as a dating app. It's just sort of like, oh, I happened to come across you, cross path type app. So it's both stigmatized and destigmatized. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's weird. What if we like mashed up like Snapchat with Tinder, where like your profile only lasted for 24 hours and you had to make a new one?
Well, more to the point, what I've been saying for years is it needs to move to video. And that's kind of what Snapchat's helping with, and that's what it really needs to go with, is like...
Wasn't that chat roulette, though? Penis, penis, penis,
yeah, I don't mean
penis,
like,
penis.
I don't mean like webcam where you're in your own home. It's almost like we should mix up Periscope, Snapchat, and Tinder. Where
Here's
like,
a better one. With the Snap part, your profile only appears to other human beings while you're using the app.
Yeah, there you go.
No offline browsing.
And it has to be live streamed what you're doing too.
There you go. So people know when you're on.
They know when you're
solved.
On, and they know that you're real too. And it's based upon real into, you know, who you are, rather than just like a picture and like, hey, I like fucking the number of women who are like, I'm shy at first, or like, I like when my guy is funny. Am I a goddamn monkey who's going to dance for you and perform for you? I like when my guy is funny. Go to the goddamn comedy club if you want a guy to make you laugh.
As Adam Carolla says, that's the biggest lie in all of dating. He said he was one of the funniest people in like all of life growing up, and it never what did he say? Never translated into an ounce of pussy. That's his line. But speaking of, apparently that doesn't matter to millennials because millennials aren't having sex. Even though millennials is from Quartz, QZ.com, even though millennials have been described as deep steeped in hookup culture, they may be actually having less sex than previous generations. Researchers from San Diego State University, Florida Atlantic University, and Widener University analyzed data from a survey given to a wide range of Americans. In a paper published in the Archives of Sexual Behavior, sounds like the worst bar ever.
I was going to say, I don't want to go millennials, or the best library ever.
They found out that more millennials between 20 and 24 years old reported having no sexual partners than the same demographic of people born in the 1960s. So 26,000 Americans were surveyed in the 1960s, and only 6% of 20 to 24-year-olds reported having no sexual partner after the age of 18, compared to more than 15% for the same age group born between 1990 and 1994. So why aren't people having sex? This article doesn't really give an answer other than like, oh, maybe they're just blowing each other instead of having sex. What say you, gentlemen? Why no nookie?
Because they don't want to do it all for the cookie. You backed me into the corner of the Limp Bizkit reference. I didn't know what to do with it. Although I guess they all have Limp Bizkits might be the issue.
That's right.
God. Let's not go back to the 90s.
I think the issue is it's just too much fucking hassle. I mean, once again, this proves that I was ahead of the curve.
Okay.
Not having sex curve?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. What I'm referring to is when I was in this age group, I wasn't having sex. And the reason I wasn't having sex is it was too stressful to try. Like, the amount of bullshit you have to go through just to, like, have a normal goddamn conversation with people is absurd. And if that's the stress you have to go through to have a normal conversation, what is it going to take to put your dick in something? Like, it's just not worth it. Is the problem.
You start off in an advantage or a disadvantage, sir, by the way. And that has nothing to do with your physicality or your mind or anything. It has to do with your not drinking. Automatic disadvantage.
If anyone who listens to this show knows, I don't need alcohol to say dumb shit to people.
Well, no. Not what I'm meaning. No, it's just when two people really love each other, Justin, what they do is they imbibe high amounts of liquor, massive quantities, and then they look at each other with goo-goo eyes, and then they fall on the floor and hump. That's how it works.
Listen to the married man. Telling him.
All of that, that was too abstract. I heard imbibe, liquor, goo-goo eyes, and falling on the floor and humping. I don't understand any of that. That is all foreign to me. Goo-goo eyes are like those things that you like, the craft things that like shake that you put on things.
Yeah,
it's like falling on the floor is falling on the floor is how you lose in wrestling or fake an injury in soccer.
And humping is what rabbits do. Yeah,
yeah, humping is what you add to camels in plastic surgery.
Zing. So this is why you started at a disadvantage, but your point is well taken.
I also started at a disadvantage because I'm 33 and still look like I'm in goddamn college.
Yes, indeed. That doesn't help. Elliot, any thoughts on why millennials aren't doing it?
I just think that it's much easier now to access porn, you know, on your smartphone. Mm-hmm. And you can get it anywhere. So I think it's just, you know, the need to go out and actually hook up, you know, and to explore things in reality, I don't think that people are really feeling that much anymore because now they can just find whatever they want on the internet. And I think that that's what it is, I think people are just kind of isolating themselves.
But that's such a hassle too, looking at porn. Like the amount of time it takes to find a video for free that actually isn't annoying as fuck. Like,
just Google it.
It just takes, but yeah. But then you watch a video and it's only like 5 minutes long and it stops right before they do anything. Or then, like, they start doing something and she makes some, like, really annoying noise when they're fucking. And you're like, oh my God, would you keep your mouth shut? Or you put in, like, Asians who like big dicks and it's only with black guys and you can't fantasize about that because you're not black.
You need representative big dick porn?
Yeah. If there's no, if there's one medium to have representation in, is it not porn? Like, if midgets were like, there's not enough midget porn, I would be like, yeah, I support that. I understand that. But if they're there are not enough midget superheroes, I'm like, no, that doesn't make sense.
So diversity for you is having short hung guys in porn?
Yeah.
White guys?
That sounds good.
Got it.
But what I've heard is that's all, I've heard that's all in gay porn, which presents a problem for me.
Just a tiny one, right? Just a little problem?
Well, not so much for me, a little one, but...
It's a hurdle. Just a hurdle that you can, you know... Anyway.
Just have a bromance. Or, what's the other term?
Bromosexual?
There you go. That one. Do that.
I mean, I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never Googled that.
Holy shite. So there you go.
All right, I guess that sums up the news for this week. Let's go into another sort of movie that was missing a money shot, I guess we could say.
Yeah.
It's time for the All Suicide Squad. It's time for the All Suicide Squad edition, except for the one trailer we're going to talk about, of The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Before we get into the Suicide Squad here, let's talk about the trailer. The teaser trailer for Christopher Nolan's new World War II movie was released. It's called Dunkirk. And for me, they actually showed it before Suicide Squad. Did you guys see it before Suicide Squad?
Yes. Yeah.
Very exciting to see it.
And emphasize what Justin was saying, the teaser trailer shows some images and then, like, right before something happens, it cuts out to the title, and Faiza, in a nearly silent theater, just said, "Fuck you." I hate when they do that shit. Faiza's a movie talker. I don't know if you guys would have guessed that.
But... No, I know. I've seen movies with her.
Yeah. Oh, I would have loved to watch Suicide Squad with the two of you. I'm sure.
I mean, that is she ignoring the beautiful shot at the end of that trailer, though? With the long shot of that, whatever it was, in the water, with all the men ducked down in succession?
Yeah.
That's a great shot.
It was a great shot, but there was no payoff. Like you said, there was no money shot. And that's the part that she hates, when people do that.
Well,
she doesn't like when they, yeah.
I mean, is she not familiar with the concept of blue balls? Like, all movie marketing is just blue balls.
Yes, Daniel, is she comfortable with the...
No comment.
I mean, now I know why you married her. If she hates being teased, it's like, all right, I'm just going to whip it out and put it in. We don't even need foreplay. But the movie, though, does the movie look good?
I don't know. I don't know what it looked like. I mean, it's a Christopher Nolan movie, and it's about World War One.
Yeah, World War One.
Oh, it's World War One. I'm sorry, I misspoke, audience members. Don't fucking tweet at me, Motive Power. It's World War One.
Those helmets, the little round helmets with the brims, are typically the giveaway.
Wait, is this actually a crossover with Wonder Woman? Because they showed these trailers back-to-back, and that's in World War One as well.
That'd be fucking awesome.
What if what was coming was the invisible jet?
That's
why you couldn't see it, Faiza.
Start that online rumor right now. Rush to the Reddit.
Oh, we'll get to that later.
For Nolan, I'll see it. Looks good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You guys know I'm in love with Interstellar. I still watch that movie repeatedly, so I'm really looking forward to this too. Because I'm really looking forward to see what he's going to do with this.
Take down with a hug.
Oh, that's true. And you didn't do the sound effect.
Trailer takedown with a hug.
All right. Actually, we have one more story here that Daniel sent to us. HBO what? Considers adding more rapes of men for gender equality purposes. This is, of course, a clickbait headline. They actually said that they have just discussed it. Like, they never said that they were going to do it, but they did discuss it in the writer's room if men would be raped in Game of Thrones land, Westeros.
Because when you think diversity, male rape is the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, exactly. Not the lack of black people in Game of Thrones.
Weren't they just complaining like about prison rape and stuff like that? Like, there was a lot of articles just recently about like the joking about prison rape and some of these comedies that have been coming out.
Oh, you don't know where that came from?
Equality. They want to have more guy on guy rape. I don't understand what's going on here.
You don't know where that came from? The prison rape jokes?
No, where'd it come from?
That's making fun of Zack Snyder. There's a quote out there where he once said that like his DC movies would be dark enough that like Batman could get raped in prison. And then people have been making fun of him for saying Batman could get raped. They're like, clearly that he doesn't understand the character if he could have Batman get raped. Not knowing it was a glib, off-the-cuff comment. Which actually does make this story even funnier. Because it's like, they're seriously discussing male rape as if it's like a legitimate thing to include it or not. But they're ripping on Snyder at the same time for it.
Stupid. It's naturalism again. It's just, come on.
I have a counter proposal. Can we just take out a lot of the rape? Like, altogether? Like, one of the things that's terrible at Game of Thrones is there's so much rape. Can we just tone it down?
To be fair, there were like two times there were rapes in Game of Thrones.
That's too many. I don't need to watch a show where people are getting raped up in here.
That's why you don't
also
watch
the killing
it, right?
Can be toned down too. That's why I don't watch the goddamn
show.
Yeah,
but people like the killing because it's white people getting killed.
Oh, I see.
All right, let's just talk about what everyone wants us to talk about. Let's talk about Suicide Squad. So what I want to talk about is this is what we'll do. We'll analyze it first, so I'll give a brief recap, then we'll talk about the themes. Then we can sort of talk about the negative reactions over it and if it was deserved and, you know, the whole fuck Marvel thing. And then we can all give our reviews. How does that sound?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. So this is going to be like a mini example of what we do in the Snyder series, but let's try and keep it truncated here. We don't want to do like an hour and a half on Suicide Squad. First of all, it doesn't deserve an hour and a half. So
our analysis will still be longer than the amount of screen time Joker had.
Yeah, true that.
Joker? What about like fucking Killer Croc or Slipknot?
Diablo.
One of them was named Slipknot?
Yeah, the rope guy was Slipknot. Okay, so Suicide Squad is about the fallout from Superman versus Batman, Batman versus Superman. And knowing Superman is dead and the world is now lacking hope, Amanda Waller says, we need to put together a team of metahumans and Will Smith to... Although actually Margot Robbie isn't, Harley Quinn's not a metahuman either. So we need to put together a team of metahumans and the two main stars of this movie aren't playing metahumans to defend against the next Superman. She goes to the government, they accept it and create Task Force X. But one of the members of Task Force X is June.
Easy for you to say.
I can't fucking say that word, apparently. We'll blame it on the sinus infection. One of the members is June, a doctor, an archaeologist, who is been possessed by a witch called the Enchantress, who is immortal. And Waller has locked June up with the leader of the Suicide Squad, the military leader who's there to keep them all in line, all the villains in line. The task force is made up of villains. And because she knew he would fall in love with June. But the problem is that what happens is he gives her leeway. The Enchantress takes over June, frees her brother, and then they proceed to take over what's the city called?
Midway City.
Okay, I was going to say Midway City, but then I was like, it's not just a bunch of carnival games. Like, they went to the ring toss and took it over.
Zing.
So they take over Midway City. So then the Suicide Squad is sent in to stop them. So, I mean, even on a basic level, and we'll get to critiques later, but on a basic level, the plot of Suicide Squad is caused by the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Like, Waller creates the problem they have to stop. And then they spend half the movie rescuing Waller. So it's like, half of this movie is like white people saving a black woman because she's put herself in a stupid situation.
Is this better or worse than the fact that Indiana Jones is completely irrelevant to his own movie? Like, if they had just not made Suicide Squad, they would not have needed Suicide Squad.
I mean, in a way, it kind of talks about, you know, the futility of the human reaction to the metahuman problem, which now let's get into the analysis. That's kind of the point of the movie, right? I saw the theme of this movie as how you deal when you have a lack of hope, and the way you deal with that is by going after the things you love and having this love in your life. And all of the characters dealt with, the members of the Suicide Squad, dealt with this love in a different way, especially Will Smith's Deadshot, the world's deadliest sniper marksman. His whole plot was about, everything was about his daughter. So even though he's a villain, he wanted to rescue his daughter or see her again. That's why he wanted to get out of prison.
He kind of states the theme of the movie in a more crude way when he's trying to hype up the Mexican stereotype.
El Diablo?
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I love him.
He says, if you don't stand for something, you ain't shit. That's what he says to him.
Right, and the standing for something in this movie is who you love, is what they're showing.
Yeah.
Now, I want to be clear. We're analyzing this. We're not saying we agree with this. I would actually disagree with this theme of this movie. But that's another problem. That's another issue. You know, this is, as we were saying, it's through El Diablo, where because he can, like, turn into fire, he accidentally killed his whole family. With Margot Robbie, Harley Quinn, it's her romance with the Joker. So we see it in all these different characters. And then it comes together in the end where Rick Flagg, the guy who loves the June, has to just kill the Enchantress's heart in order to save June, but he thinks he's going to kill June at the same time. So there are, you know, there are elements here of trying to dramatize this theme. But there's a question I actually want to ask you guys about the theme and about a specific scene that a Midsider submitted to me. A Midsider, Nolan, messaged me, and he pointed specifically to the Harley Quinn origin scene where she falls in the acid or jumps in the acid. And in that scene, which to me was the best scene in the movie and worth the price of admission, the Joker says to her, "Would you die for me?" And then he says, "No, that's too easy. Would you live for me?" And then she jumps into the acid. Now, from an objectivist reading and from a Snyder reading, this plays across as pure evil because he's asking her for the sanction of the victim, basically. And traditionally, Harley Quinn and Joker's relationship is an abusive one.
Yeah.
But in the movie, they cut out a lot of Joker, as Daniel mentioned, and I've read rumors that they cut it out to make their relationship seem more romantic than abusive. Now, of course, there are other abusive elements. He did make her jump into acid. He did say, "I'm going to hurt you really, really bad." But for what it's worth, I think it came across more that he loved her, and that's why he was following the Suicide Squad around and trying to save her, than he saw her as a toy and a pawn, which is how he really does. So my question for you is, is that how you read that as well? And does it undermine that scene? Because I think that scene would play better if it was an abusive relationship.
Yes, the whole thing would have played better if it was an abusive relationship. I have a horrible problem trying to turn bad guys into empathetic characters. I don't necessarily see Deadshot in this movie as 100% bad guy. We don't know about the people he's killing. He could be a vigilante a la Rorschach or Rorschach's inspiration, The Question, where
like
they're going
Dexter,
after bad people.
Where Dexter
or
only
like
serial
Dexter.
Kills bad people?
Yeah, and you know, I think even Deadshot in this is more sympathetic than a Dexter kind of character.
I agree.
We assume he's killing like high-profile mob bosses and horrible, horrible, horrible people, and he's doing it to take care of his daughter, to give her the best possible education, the best possible life.
Right, and they say, they even do the traditional, anti-male thing where he only kills men. He won't kill women and children. They establish that. Although on the other hand, they do establish that he's sort of indiscriminate. As long as you pay him, he'll kill someone.
Yeah, it's just in the movie, it's not established that he's clearly a villain in the same way that certainly Joker or Harley Quinn are villains.
Yeah.
So I have a hard time with movies that try to make genuinely horrible people like the Joker and Harley Quinn empathetic. Like, that's already one way they're going to lose me, and it's one of the reasons I wasn't excited about watching this movie in the first place. So I thought that would have played so much better, so much more consistent, if they did have a very clearly abusive relationship and you could have made him a bad person who was manipulating her.
Right, and her arc would have been better, because at the end of the movie, I don't even give a shit that I'm spoiling it, but at the end of the movie, she has a realization that she loves the team, and she makes a big move to stand up for the team, where everyone thinks she's going to sell them out and go join the bad guy. They think she's going to go into a new abusive relationship with the Enchantress, but she actually tricks the Enchantress instead of being tricked by the Joker, and the team is able to overcome the Enchantress because of it.
Yeah.
But because the relationship with the Joker is not abusive, that sort of arc where she is freed again, you know, where she's freed and is independent, doesn't come through. Because I really think they edited it down, not just to make it more palatable to audiences, but I think they edited it down to make it fit the theme better, which was this whole cockamamie love thing, which they were trying to force the movie into. Ooh. What makes them human? Because Amanda Waller says early on, the problem with metahumans is that they're still human. And then she says that gives them a weakness, which is the love she uses to manipulate them.
Yeah, here's my problem with that as well. They didn't even keep that element as a running part of the theme. Like, so, by the way, the exposition that Justin gave explaining Suicide Squad is only about 1/100th the length of the fucking exposition at the beginning of Suicide Squad.
Which save it
never
for the review.
Seemed to end. Okay. Sorry,
save it for the review.
Again,
said I've done a lot of thinking about things. I did a lot of thinking about the exposition and how to truncate it as little as possible.
Yeah. So let me finish my point about the theme, Elliot, and then I'll let you jump in, which is that they didn't keep that sort of manipulating the love thing through the theme, because after she goes through this whole explanation of it, it's like, oh, we're going to put chips in your head that blow up if you don't do what we say. So do what we say.
Yep. Like, I had that problem.
You just
too.
Undermined her entire fucking theme.
Right.
Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, in keeping with what Justin was saying about, you know, the theme of losing hope, of how about man turning evil when you rob him of hope. If you, and again, a theme that we don't agree with, but if you really want to see that theme handled superbly, I think that you should read Les Miserables by Victor Hugo. Because he writes about this. He writes when he introduces Jean Valjean in the novel, he writes really, really well about what happens to a man without hope. How does he function? How does he show? And, you know, I mean, he handles it so much better. And I don't know what I was thinking when I went to see the movie, but I was thinking, because it starts off, and one of my favorite moments at the beginning is when Harley Quinn tells Ike Barinholtz, you know, I love who I want, when I want, where I want. You know, nobody can tell me what to do. And I thought that would be an interesting theme to introduce, the theme of self-ownership, self-determination, ownership versus being a slave of the state, even if you're a bad guy. I would have really liked to have seen that. And I was very disappointed that lesser theme wasn't fleshed out more, because I thought that there was a real opportunity for that there. But if you really want to see a very, very good handling of a man without hope, you know, who is robbed of hope, and see that written and handled in a masterful way, read the works of Victor Hugo, because I think that is just a much better treatment of that theme than what they were trying to do with Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
So
are we reviewing it, or are we...
No, so as a sort of transition into reviewing it, let's talk about sort of the cultural conversation around it for a little bit.
Okay.
This sort of fell squarely in the crosshairs of the Marvel versus DC bullshit. And what I'm talking about is, like, at the premiere, the director, David Ayer, like, said, fuck Marvel. And then he, like, came out the next day and apologized, even though Stan Lee just sort of laughed at him. And other Marvel people were like, whatever, it's cool, it's a competition, we're down, which is like the rational way to respond. And then, of course, fans have been petitioning Rotten Tomatoes to have that be shut down because, again, like Batman versus Superman, critics destroyed this movie. It got about the same percentage of around 27 that Batman versus Superman got. a one critic, Variety, even compared the movie to Sucker Punch and said Air was trapped under Snyder's style. Which,
if only
I mean,
this movie was Sucker Punch.
My God.
I know, like, aesthetically, it, like, it's, you can tell directing-wise it's not anything like Snyder's style. Except he did direct the Flash scene where Flash Flash captures Captain Boomerang.
Yeah, that was cool to see.
I did lean over, by the way, to Fiza and said, I wish there was more Zack Snyder in this movie.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So the first question before we review it ourselves, which will lead into our question, our reviews, did it deserve to be as shellacked as it was by critics? Or is this an example of, you know, Donald Trump's campaign campaign financing or what is it, fundraising manager is an executive producer on this and Batman versus Superman? Is there a little something going on behind the scenes that we don't realize that's getting DC these bad reviews? Or is it warranted this time?
Difficult for me.
Yeah.
Specifically on this film. Clearly, I don't think Batman vs. Superman deserved the shellacking it got. And I think we're just going to see basically everything Zack Snyder touches get shellacked from this point forward, much like everything that M. Night Shyamalan touches gets shellacked. And then there'll be some renaissance and resurgence later on when he does some art film. But the difficult thing about this movie is it probably didn't deserve the amount of shellacking it got, like 27%. And by the way, the Rotten Tomatoes score is not like 27% out of 100, like a grade. It's how what percent of critics say they would recommend the movie. And to recommend the movie, you only need to give it a 60 out of 100 score. So only 27% of critics would recommend this movie. That's still pretty low. I don't think it deserved that bad of a reputation. I mean, it was, people could be entertained by this movie. Certainly people who love Suicide Squad, who love Harley Quinn, who love the characters are going to get something out of this. So
who love Will Smith?
Who love Will Smith. His performance was by far the best performance in the entire film. Yeah. So I think there's something, so there's some value to this film. It's not, it shouldn't have been panned as much as it was. That being said, I'm not going to get into my review, but I won't defend this film as being good, even. But anyway.
Elliot, do you think, do you agree with Daniel that there's something going on here? We don't really know what it is, though. Is it just the anti-Snyder thing?
We know what it is. The culture hates romanticism in any form of it. Even though I would not categorize this film necessarily as being a romantic film, there are... The fact that it's associated with Zack Snyder, who is the most prominent romantic filmmaker next to probably Christopher Nolan in the cinema nowadays. I mean, for that alone, that association alone is really what's generating a lot of this outrage. And as you've mentioned before, Snyder is the spine right now of the DC cinematic universe. So this reaction that people are having is really, I think, at its core, a reaction to romanticism. We've discussed it before, they can't handle it. They've not learned how to analyze things. They have not learned how to analyze the theme of a film and the integration of a theme and a plot. They have not learned that art should be understood. It's not. It shouldn't just be an explosion of sensations and visuals and stuff like that. All the things that they accuse Zack Snyder of are the things that the majority of less talented filmmakers are guilty of. Because it's not just how it looks, it's the entire work that has to be understood. It has to be disseminated. It has to be grasped and analyzed so that you can understand what the artist is trying to convey. And our culture doesn't do that anymore. And I think that's why they lash out. Now, whether or not Suicide Squad deserved this amount of shellacking, to use your word, I wouldn't call it the worst film that I'd ever seen. I actually think that Civil War, this was still better than Civil War, because even in this movie, at least the characters, even Harley Quinn, who's still impetuous and acts abruptly, but even she has a brain and she's thinking and figuring things out. She's piecing things together just like everybody else. You know, so it's not like people just acting on emotional instinct and letting those emotional reactions propel the plot. At least there was a goal, purposeful action in this film, even if the narrative didn't necessarily consistently hold that up. So I don't think that this film deserves to be torched and to be hated the way that it's been hated. But having said that, this is probably my least favorite movie from the DC universe. And the reason why
well, there's been three. It's the third. Huh? It's the third one. I mean, that's not like saying a lot.
Well, no, there have been other DC movies, just not in the current universe with Zack Snyder. But this film, to me, I told you, Justin, I am not an anti-hero person. I'm not really big on villains being the protagonist of a film, you know, and having it's not really my favorite kind of subject matter, my favorite kind of story. So for me, I walked into it and I went to see it with my dad. And I told him I was walking into it. I have no expectations above or below anything. Like I just want to see it for what it is. And now that I have, I mean, I came away from it and I just felt like, yeah, it was entertaining and the acting was very, very good. And I liked a lot of the cinematography, you know, and there's definitely a lot of aesthetic choices that are very Snyder like. But at the end of the day, I don't think that my life was made better for having seen it. You know what I mean?
Do you want to give your score since you pretty much just gave your review?
What's our score?
It's between 1 and 10.
10 being great, 1 being terrible?
Yes.
Yeah.
Same thing it is every week.
Try to take over the world. Oh, yeah. Wait.
I would say probably a 5.
Yeah.
Okay. Daniel, do you want to go?
Yeah. I admitted, I don't know if I said it on the podcast, maybe I did, but I definitely said it to Justin that I was not excited to see this film. Similar thing to Elliot, not big on this whole idea of humanizing bad guys. I know this is not an original, like there are comic books about this, and I understand that. I wouldn't have read those either. A lot of this movie for me was, it seemed like it was just a big shout out to the people who did read the comics. A lot of sort of underlying insider jokes that I wasn't privy to. It just seemed like a giant like marketing sort of like, here's a piece of candy for those who have hung on this long. So to me, a lot of the jokes didn't hit. I thought the comedy was in general bizarre in many instances, like edited weirdly. Will Smith, Elliot said the acting was good. I would say that Will Smith did a superb job with his character and Margot Robbie did a superb job with hers. But outside of that, I thought the acting was, I don't know, like the guy who played Flag, the main military guy, it's like you chose as your character or you chose to interpret this as like, you know, hillbilly moron. Like, I don't know. I didn't get any of it. Like, I didn't understand the choices made.
Having seen him in The Killing, that's just kind of who he is. He actually dialed it back a lot compared to his character in The Killing. So
I was just dumbfounded. Like, the,
don't
like,
watch
American
The Killing if you're
sniper, but a retard. Yeah. Like, that's yeah, what if, you chose.
If you hate like the hillbilly thing, like don't see his character in like The Killing. Like it,
the love story between those two, him and the archaeologist, fuck, like nothing was less believable than that to me.
It was handled terribly.
The only woman he's ever loved ever. Yeah, okay, fuck off. And then the action stuff, not interesting to me. Here's my biggest problem, and this is maybe a bit of a naturalistic critique, and you can yell at me for it, but it's sort of like I'm completely fine suspending disbelief within the given universe. So like, you know, there are monsters in this universe and there are witches and there's special powers. That's all perfectly fine. But we're going to send people to fight an immortal witch who use bullets and baseball bats. That's going to be our go-to people to fight an immortal witch. Just, I can't deal. Like, that's just fucking dumb to me. It's just dumb. And it's not interesting, and I got nothing out of it whatsoever. This is probably my least favorite DC movie, aside from Green Lantern, which is more enjoyable in the sense that you can just laugh at it and how terrible the CGI is. The Green Lantern character in general, his universe is weird. But so my review of this movie is more along the lines of like a 3.5. There were some jokes that were funny. Will Smith gets basically 3.25 of those stars on his own. and Margot Robbie gets the other quarter. And that's really it. I will never see this movie again. If there are sequels, I don't want to see them. By the way, Joker was played up as being a huge part of this, and he was irrelevant.
Yes,
barely in the movie, and his entire plot was meaningless. Harley Quinn would have ended up in the same situation whether or not Joker was there, except for the very, 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 very last scene.
Well, that's what I was saying with him being edited down. They took out like her psychological arc by having it be a romance rather than an abusive relationship.
Exactly, and the whole rescue thing was completely pointless. Just completely and utterly pointless. And is the Joker dead? Completely non-suspenseful. Oh, and continue.
Yeah,
because
they're going to kill off the Joker right away.
Right, they're going to kill off the fucking Joker. Yeah, exactly. And keep harping. The big reveal of, like, the person they're rescuing in the tower is Waller. That didn't hit for me at all. Like, it was completely non-climactic, uninteresting, and sort of just like, really? This is what we're doing?
Yeah.
Instead of like, oh, wow.
It's supposed to be ironic that she's the biggest villain of them all.
Yeah. It was. Love Zack Snyder. I wish this movie had been more Zack Snyder. I wish they had taken more cues from him in both his directing style and his sense of life and his writing and all that, and not less. If people complain there was too much Zack Snyder in this movie, I say, pshaw. I scoff at you, sirs, and say, no, more Zack Snyder could have made this movie at least palatable. Mm-hmm. Why is this?
I will say I like Jay Courtney as Captain Boomerang, only because it was so nice to see him do something. I'm so used to him being like the guy in Jack Reacher, you know, who killed that girl, and who's the sniper at the beginning, and then seeing him in like a Good Day to Die Hard. He was John McClane's son. So now seeing him in this role with his natural Australian accent, I liked his performance in that.
It's like
too.
The poor man's Seth Rogen. Anyway, Justin probably liked this more than both of us combined. But
I did like it more than both of you. Not more than both of you combined, because that would be an 8.5, and that would be not anywhere close to reality. The biggest problem this movie faced for me is, as Daniel already hinted at, the insane amount of exposition. So the movie starts and you see Deadshot and Harley Quinn in prison. Then it cuts to a scene of, as Midsider RJD says, music videos, where Waller is sitting talking to someone else proposing Task Force X. I got it that time. To him, and as she does, it shows music videos of each of the characters, of the members of the team. Then it cuts to Waller in the Pentagon with the guy telling whoever's the head in the Pentagon that, yeah, we should do this. And with that scene is interlaced with the Enchantress breaking free and freeing her brother and taking over the Carnival City. Mm-hmm. You think they would have done more things with Harley Quinn in Midway City? I don't think it was Midway City.
But yeah, anyway. No, it was Midway City because I thought it was Chicago.
Oh, okay. Yeah, every DC city is Chicago except Metropolis, which is New York.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so then after all that exposition, the inciting action is finally the fact that the Enchantress decides to build a weapon, which we never learn, or build a piece of technology, which we never learn what it is and what it does. It just seems to swirl above the tower she's in, the high rise she's in. And then when they stop her, it just all falls. But I mean, even I will say this, I'm shitting on this villain. This villain at least had more motivation than the villain in Ghostbusters, who was kind of like, I'm an angry beta male. I want to win because I hate women. And they don't even establish she hates women. It's just taken for granted. At least Enchantress, wanted to be free and, rule the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's at least on par with a Marvel villain.
Yeah. The other thing, by the way, about that weapon and internal logic, a thing that she's, again, an immortal witch, but she dies. We'll leave that point aside. The weapon, all we see is that it sort of, cuts through, these major military installations with a giant bolt of lightning. But she doesn't use a giant bolt of lightning to wipe out all the people directly in front of her. Really? You're an idiot villain? I don't get it. Also, her voice, the voice acting for that part was so fucking awful, I laughed. Especially when she says to him, "You don't have the balls."
Yeah, which, like oh, an immortal witch cares about balls. But there are problems with that. But as you said, Will Smith, this is great. This is vintage Will Smith. If you love Will Smith in the 90s like I did, you'll love it. Margot Robbie was great as Harley Quinn. If you like Harley Quinn, you'll like this movie. And Elliot says it's not romanticism. I think it is. I think it's what Ayn Rand would call pulp romanticism, or like this is third-rate romanticism. It's grasping at romanticism. It's trying. You know, it's in the Snyder. It's like Snyder drafted a kid on his team, and this is like the rookie trying to like make it happen type deal. So I see what it's going for. And for that, I give it a 6.5. I give it a 6.5 because it's better than Civil War. And I would put it about on par with Apocalypse, you know, X-Men Apocalypse, because there were scenes in X-Men Apocalypse where were very good. And here, the Harley Quinn origin scene with the Joker, with the line I already referred to, and the bar scene were worth the price of admission to me. If the entire scene were as good as those two scenes, it would have been a great movie. And as I said...
The bar scene,
Go ahead.
The bar scene was the best scene. It actually gave emotional weight and consequence to what was going on.
Right, and it was a good pacing because it was right before the climactic battle, and you saw what all the characters were going through. Yeah, and there was good jokes in it. It all worked. And as Midsider Nolan pointed out, it was almost as if Snyder was involved in those two scenes and nothing else.
Yeah.
All right. So there are, of course, lots of reactions to Suicide Squad, so we're going to talk about it a little more and kind of what's going on with the internet and the culture in it, with it, in Reddit on Reddit. Sony, stupid, Xbox, lame, PC, gaming all the way, EA, blow, Steam, rocks, got race for my firewall. See, these things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't host it, but we will repost it. First Reddit, the best thing to come from Suicide Squad will be the influx of Harley Quinn costumes this Halloween.
Yeah, that ass, though.
Well, that's what I'm going to ask. Is this true or false? Agree or disagree?
They will come out this Halloween, and then feminists will decry that they're offensive and sexist and objectifying, and then they will go away quickly. That's my hypothesis.
But is it the best thing to come from Suicide Squad?
Oh, I see. yes. No, I mean, not really. But, I mean, the Harley Quinn in general as a character is probably, and Will Smith are the best things that come from Suicide Squad. The downside of that is you're going to see a lot of women who are not Margot Robbie in Harley Quinn costumes. It's really the negative of that.
Don't fat shame me.
You didn't think you were going to be in a Harley Quinn costume. But, no, I could be wrong.
Just saying. Well, I mean, I could probably pull it off. I don't know. But I wouldn't try.
more or fewer dates on Grindr in that outfit.
Is this the best thing to come from Suicide Squad, Elliot?
I don't think it's the best thing to come from Suicide Squad. I think if I had to pick the best thing that comes from Suicide Squad, it's... God, I'm trying to think. I can't even think. I guess the if I had to pick the best thing to come from Suicide Squad is that we got at... oh, gosh. No, I can't think
this is with a punchline where you go, oh, no, it is the best thing that came from Suicide Squad. That would be the punchline.
I guess it would. I don't think it's the best thing, but yeah, I guess it is because I don't see much good coming from it either.
Jared Leto's abs. I'll give you one. Oh,
yeah, you know, like if there was a sexy Joker, if people were wearing Joker costumes, I could see that happening.
Well, I'm sure there'll be couples costumes, Joker with Harley Quinn.
Yeah, so
Joker must do P90X. Jesus.
Which is funny.
And I told you he's bisexual.
Isn't it a little weird if you're in a relationship and you wear a Joker and Harley Quinn costume together?
Yeah. That's a little weird, isn't it? Come here, baby. Let's jump in this boiling pot of acid.
Hey, let's pretend we're in an abusive relationship.
Yeah. Let me put these electrodes on your temples.
What's funny, though, is that in the comics, Harley Quinn breaks free of the Joker, and she actually becomes a hero in her own right. Because she actually, like, breaks free and puts herself together. So, maybe that'll
spoiler
happen.
Spoiler alert. Jeez.
I mean, you know, I think something
Flash
that...
Flashpoint is part of the DC universe, there's really no spoiler, because nobody knows what the hell's going on anymore.
True.
I think the thing that needs to be talked about is this movie's made $135 million in America and $267 worldwide already on a budget of $175. The best thing to come from this is that people want to see DC movies. And after I saw this movie, I went to a restaurant and I was wearing a Batman shirt. So the hostess noted that her friend told her to see the movie no matter what the critics said. And the fact that people still want to see this movie, it's still making the money, and they're starting to disregard the critics and not take them seriously, because I think they overplayed their hand by shellacking this as much as they did Batman versus Superman. I think the best thing that comes from
that's where it's
DC started. Fans, Donald Trump voters? Dun, dun, dun.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Connect the dots here with his fundraising manager, and then... You know, we've always kind of wondered why they've hated these movies. And you look at all the movies the guy, if you look him up, has produced, executive produced on. It's kind of interesting, all the ones he did. And, you know, we've always wondered about Zack Snyder, you know?
Yeah. Although Snyder Trump?
No, yeah. I think, honestly, if anything, this just confirms to me that Snyder's a libertarian. I mean, the Easter egg came out that Larry Fong hides a three of clubs in all of the movies he shot with Snyder, which, you know, of course, with how meticulous Snyder is with each scene, that Snyder must know why he does it. And do you guys know why he does it, who it's a reference to?
I don't.
It's a reference to Penn and Teller.
Oh, cute.
So you're going to tell me Snyder doesn't approve that and it isn't related? Like, it all just comes together, you know what I mean? Whenever you keep digging deeper and deeper in this stuff, you find more connections like that. Like, what are the odds that somehow... in all of this studying with Snyder, we find a connection to Penn and Teller. You know what I mean?
I like it.
All right. Next Reddit. This Reddit sort of talks about the reviews and everything, and they talk about why the reviews are the way they are, and I want to see if you guys agree with this argument. The Reddit's called, "I don't understand why critics didn't like this." That's in quotes. And he's responding to people who have this critique. His basic response is that people are only liking this movie because they're going in with the DC knowledge. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. For example, what he says is, when you remove the DC comic skin from these characters, you can start to see clearly what critics are reacting to. Most of the characters aren't very likable. Their introductions are forced. The editing is chaotic. The music choices are forced and often drown out the dialogue. The dialogue is stunted and uninspired. Like when Will Smith's character Charles references the movie's title in a cringy way by saying, "What are we, some kind of death theme? Death team?" That's pretty classic film hackery. We almost get no look at who the Aussie guy is. The swamp guy only has a couple words to say in the movie.
Swamp guy?
Well, he's creating a straw man here, right? He's acting like this is what the movie is if you take away the skin. Is that fair to say that if you take away the names and you just make it this, that that's actually what the movie is? Or is this person part of this rhetoric that's seeking to make the movie seem a lot worse than it is?
Yeah, it's unfair. It's an unfair critique because you could say that about anything.
Right.
Like, the characters are written a certain way because they are who they are. They would be written differently if it was just generic psycho clown lady or guy with crocodile skin. You wouldn't write them in the same way.
You wouldn't act them in the same way.
The critique is disconnected from reality.
Right. That's what I think. This caught on a lot of traction as like, oh yeah, this is the way DC fans are responding. But this person's seeking to say that DC, basically the argument is DC fans are bringing lots of things to the movie. But this, I don't think he's right. I think this guy's taking everything away from the movie and trying to say it sucks. Like, it's reductio ad absurdum, right? It's saying, like, well, every movie is a guy tries to fall in love with a woman type logic.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you could say a better version of his critique would be something like DC is relying too heavily on the fan love of these characters and not enough on good story structure and writing, which is a little bit of what I said earlier in terms of why the jokes didn't land in many cases. Mm-hmm. But it's not fair to say because these characters have a history, that's sort of why they're, and you take that history away. It's, you know what this is? Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh my God. This is a Rawlsian film critic. He wants a veil of ignorance on the characters. You can't know what the characters are a priori. You have to write them as if they have no history or inclination or whatever. Fuck you, Rawls, and everything you bring. You make everything shit.
Well, yeah, that's the idea. Is a lot of people have that idea that with exposition, it's you have to establish everything about the character from the ground up. There's nothing given about the character. You have to everything that's in there, you have to establish it. And if you don't establish it, it leaves the audience confused because, as Elliot said, they don't want to think for themselves and figure it out. They just want to sort of have it thrown at them.
Yeah, but in a well-made movie, you know, because you were talking about the exposition, introducing the characters. In a really well-made movie, a lot of it can be seen. So there doesn't really have to be dialogue introducing a character, and you don't really have to have a lot of exposition because – you should be able to see the character in action and be able to glean from their action in different contexts who that person is, and that should be able to help you inform who they are as you go forward in the story. So I don't buy this idea that you have to know everything about a character in this movie, because if you come to it and you don't know anything about the character previously, well then, you know, you're just faking it out. No, I mean, in a well-made movie, and I'm not saying that Suicide Squad's a well-made movie, but you should be able to observe a character, see their action, and know, like, okay, this is how Harley Quinn reacts in this situation. From that, I can glean that this is the kind of person she is. Let's continue with the movie.
I'm more fucking proud of myself than I should be, but one of the fucking podcasts calls out a Rawlsian film critic.
I think this guy's just internalized Rawlsism. I don't think.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, most people who internalize Kantian principles aren't Kantians. They just have internalized his ideas because they're so prevalent. Same with Rawls, bitches. Down with John Rawls.
Fair enough. Okay, last Reddit. My brother, who is a lawyer, and I are going to sue WB and DC for false advertising, misleading visual images, and gaining a profit from us and a million others due to these acts. Our case has been accepted. We begin 11/08/16. And to be clear, this is written in England, so it's actually going to happen in a few days on the 11th of August. So my first thing would be, this is further proof that England's a little far ahead of us with this farce stuff.
Yeah, so wait. What misleading in what way? Like what is misleading about DC and Warner Brothers? Their trailers and shit? Their marketing?
The post claims that he went in there specifically to see scenes of Joker that were not in the final cut. Likewise, there were scenes of Katana that were not in the final cut. The Japanese lady that I didn't even mention because she doesn't really matter.
So inconsequential to the plot?
Right. Yeah. And he goes further on in his lawsuit to say that when he asked for his money back, he was laughed at. And so he wants reimbursement for the embarrassment he suffered. And also he drove 100 miles from Scotland to London to see the movie. And he wants to be reimbursed for that because, as I was saying, there were scenes in the trailer that were not in the movie and he wanted to see those.
There are no movie theaters in Scotland?
I don't know. I don't like people asked him that and he didn't respond to any of those questions. So
is he going to need compensation for the fact that we're laughing at his dumb ass now on this show? Like that he's made an embarrassment out of himself for posting this stupid shit.
The welcome to the Midside could become evidence in a court case.
Yeah.
Moving on up. I love the fact that his name is Black Panther.
At some point, you just have to understand what a trailer is, right? You can't think that a trailer is fully representative of a movie. Otherwise, you're just, what's the technical term? A dumbass. It's representative of some of the scenes, but some of the things you don't even see in the trailer. Some of the action is shot specifically for a trailer. Some of it ends up on the cutting room floor. That's why it's a trailer and not a snippet from the movie.
So his
Am I missing something?
Well, his argument is it's like when you go into McDonald's and like there's a picture of the burger, you're going to get pretty close to what the picture is on the
menu. No, you're not.
Menu.
No, you're not. That's a dumb example. If you said pick the stupidest fucking example you would come up with, I would say, well, fast food pictures. That would be the stupidest fucking example you can come up with. One, the burgers look nothing like that when you
pick them.
Have you ever seen a quarter pounder? Never looks anything like the picture of a quarter pounder. And then two, walk in and go, I'll have a quarter pounder. And they say, sorry, we're out of the quarter pounder patties for today. Do you turn around, walk out, and get your lawyer? Because the menu showed a quarter pounder. Therefore, you deserve a quarter pounder. Shut up, you self-entitled prick.
Jesus what about Christ. The argument, though, that trailers are false advertising because they often show scenes that aren't in the movie in the trailer?
It's a trailer. Things get cut. We know this. It's like anything where it's like every business does this, where they advertise certain things and little things are changed in production. An example in Justin and I's life, I don't know if Justin paid attention to this, the Funko Pop line for voting that had Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and Bernie Sanders.
You're talking about the eyes to make them look older underneath the lines under the eyes?
No, different example. All of the advertisements for the Hillary Clinton one have her in a pink pantsuit. But there is no pink pantsuit Pop. It's only her in a blue pantsuit. It's because I believe there were some complaints about this with the Clinton camp. And they had to change the production.
Oh.
So
yeah,
where's my pink pantsuit Hillary?
I saw some people freaking out about that. They're like, I want to complete my collection. Where's that variant? Where can I buy the variant?
It's not a variant. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
this happens. This is just part of production and advertising.
So the important thing...
For all industries, ever.
Right. So the important thing is, when they're advertising, they have to be advertising the essential of the product. So what's the essential that you're advertising for a movie?
You know, the main characters, the name, the aesthetic, the general plot that the trailer gives. But the specifics may vary.
Right, because in a writing process, the concretes may vary. You may include some, take some out. And that's the thing is, this is a very concrete-bound argument this person is making. Mm-hmm. Oh, because these specific concretes are missing, I didn't get what I wanted. That's like if the Patriots wore their throwback uniforms all season. Oh, well, I didn't really see the Patriots because I didn't see their uniform. No.
Yeah.
That's concrete-bound thinking. It doesn't matter what they're wearing on the field. They're only wearing that pragmatically. They only have the different colors to be able to distinguish between each other. They're wearing the pads to protect themselves. Everything's designed to be optimal to play the game better. That's all pragmatic. That's not the essential of the team. And it's the same thing here. He is not upset over the essential of the movie. He's upset over the particulars, the concretes that are non-essential. So he got what he paid for, but he, unfortunately, because he's so dumb, he actually paid for the concretes. This is what's become of education and society. We're not paying for the abstract of art. We're paying for the concrete. Oh, well, I only wanted this painting if you painted it in blue. It's in red. I don't want it anymore. No, I thought you paid for the artist's vision.
Well, hopefully the magistrates in good old jolly England will laugh this out of court.
Well, he said that the case was accepted. Isn't that what he said?
Well,
what idiot accepted it?
I'm assuming a lawyer took the case. A lawyer said, I will represent you in this.
No, he doesn't mean that because he's saying... my brother, who's a lawyer, accepted the case. So the courts accepted it, and they probably accept a lot of things just to laugh them out. So
No. Well, that's misleading language then. You take any lawsuit to a court, they will hear it. That is how the law works, except that many lawsuits get dismissed on the first hearing.
Right. Well, and that's why where Elliot points out this guy's username is Black Panther 2016, you have to wonder if this is a Marvel fan trying to prove a point about DC, ultimately.
Wow, I was going troll. Racial, but yeah, Marvel works too.
I think it's more Marvel than it is racial.
Well, I was going wildly racist, but I guess we could do aesthetic.
I love how this time I'm not the racist one.
Shocking, fucking awe.
All right, what did we learn this trip, Daniel?
I learned that Justin thinks the height of femdom is fucking Mila Kunis. What the hell?
I just picked an example I thought we would all agree on. That's all.
I know. Couldn't pick Raquel Welch or Raquel Welch. I mean, Jesus.
40?
Just learn something about you, Daniel.
Come on. She's one of the most beautiful women ever to live in the history of time.
Elliot, what did you learn?
I learned that you, Justin, are short and well hung, apparently.
Thought we've established this on other episodes. Although I do love how everything. I love how everything this week in the learning is about me, though. I appreciate that.
Justin, what did you learn this week about yourself?
Apparently, I'm really, really important. That's what I just learned.
No. Well, if you think that Justin's important,
yeah.
Keep on listening.
Yeah.
By going to iTunes and searching for The Midside in the little podcast area, and we'll come up. Scroll past Welcome to Night Vale. Give them a middle finger as you're scrolling by. Click on our podcast and give us a 5-star review. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars. That helps us move up in the iTunes searching rank. We have so many great 5-star reviews. It's kind of sickening. Like, I love you people, but you're a bit psychotic about us, which I love even more. So let's keep it up. And then if you don't want to do that, that's fine. You can go to twitter.com/TheMidSide or facebook.com/TheMidSide or Snapchat Justin at The Midside, Instagram The Midside, basically all the socials The Midside, whatever you want to do in the social media realm. We're there, creeping on Instagram girl photos, etc. And then, of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Patreon. If only James was here. We need that drop from James, where he's worshiping at the altar of Patreon. Patreon is the site that allows us to collect real money from you, which we are insanely appreciative of, every time we create content. So not just for the fuck of it every month, if we decide to take a fucking month off and be lazy and not give you anything, you don't have to pay us anything. It's per piece of content. Isn't that genius? So you can go to patreon.com/TheMidSide. You can sign up to give us a 10 cents per episode, a dollar per episode, 135,000 million billion about $1 per episode. That's not a real number. And we appreciate it. It helps us keep the lights on, helps us get this podcast to more people. Thanks so much to the Liberty.me folks for listening in. We appreciate them distributing the podcast through their network. And hashtag Feel the Johnson.
I'm Justin M. Wisniewski, and I hope you learned something this trip. This concludes your journey into The Midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
But I guess it should be hashtag Feel the Justin.
Yo, if we can get that going, online dating will work.
Mostly on Grindr.